Welcome to MGO HockeyCast 2.2, where we have the best scrambled eggs around. So one of my jobs, starting when I was starting with the podcast, was that I had to get the equipment and set it out, make sure it was ready to go so we could walk in and prep and everything. And so obviously I would do that on the HockeyCast too. And last week or a few weeks ago when I was putting it away, I accidentally packed Anthony up into the equipment. And when I unpacked it today, he was gone. And I was freaking out because it was time to do a HockeyCast. I didn't know where to go. And so I had to make a call, and I thought of my good buddy and MGO co-starter when I started at MGO Blog, who's also done some hockey work himself for MGO Blog and some other things. He also edits the stuff that I do on Fridays when I write, and has actually been on a podcast before last December, I think, when we were doing the recruiting podcast. So I thought I'd call in Adam Peppermint Schnepp. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm great, David. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. We've tried to get you on a few times in the past when we were doing this last year. We tried to call you in, had some problems. Cell phones are really hard these days. I don't know if you tried to use a phone, but like I look at it and it has two buttons and I'm like, I don't even know what to do with this. So we couldn't actually get a connection with you and it didn't really work. But the goal was to do it last year. Didn't work. So now there's an opening, at least temporarily, for this evening, and I wanted to see what some of your thoughts were on the season. So we've talked about a few things, and it's good to have you on, man.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. No, this has been good. So Michigan's played about 8 games so far, and
it's been up and down.
There's been some positives.
There have been, yeah.
But maybe not as many as we'd hoped. We can just kind of go through the series. So they started about a month ago. Gosh, it's been a month already. Mm-hmm. A month ago against Clarkson, who is generally a really good team. They usually finish probably top 10 in pairwise. They usually have a second or third seed. And they've never gone super far in the tournament, but they always seem to be right up there. So we knew coming in that was going to probably be a tough series, probably tough defensively, or I should say offensively for Michigan, but that they have a tough defense, decent goaltending. And that kind of bore out as Michigan drew them 1-1 in the first game, ended up losing 3-1, 3-2 in the second game. I thought that they really could have won that first game. They had a lot of attempts on net and had chances to score. They just couldn't really get it done. What did you see when you were going over it?
So to your first point right there, if we're going through Corsi, they out-attempted Clarkson by quite a bit.
Michigan had
73 attempts in the first game. Clarkson has 50. Yeah. And at even strength, you know, Michigan has 52. Clarkson has 34. So completely agree. They could have won the first one that they drew. Defensively, I think Michigan looked okay.
Yeah.
There are some bright spots just structurally. I feel like guys in general have been in the right place at the right time. That second game, going back to Corsi, they out-attempted them again. Michigan had 63 attempts. Clarkson had 55. They again out-attempted them at even strength, but it was closer, 48-43.
So that's mostly 50-50 in the second
game. Yeah, exactly.
So the thing about that first game that I remember also is that Cam York got hurt.
Yes.
And so then he ended up missing the next game and I believe the next series.
Exactly.
And that was kind of a blow to their defense because they lost a lot on defense from last year. And he was kind of, I mean, you know, he's a mid-first rounder. So it's kind of like, oh, he'll come in and beat Quinn Hughes. Well, no. Because Quinn Hughes is probably a top 3 or 4 rookie in the NHL this year. Mm-hmm. You're not just going to replace that.
Right.
But you can definitely see when York has the puck that there is some high-end skill there, and he jumped right in on the power play, and he looked more in control in his own zone than a lot of freshmen we've seen for Michigan lately.
Yeah, and I know Anthony mentioned on the season preview podcast that you probably won't see Cam York round into form until around Christmas, and I think he's still on track for that, even though he missed some of that time. When he came back, he did look fairly rusty, mm-hmm. Which, hey, he's a
And we don't know
a young player.
And we don't know that he's fully healthy, right?
Right, exactly. But we know he's healthy enough to go.
Right.
Right. And I think we're seeing him get healthier on the fly. I think he really rounded into form just against Ohio State. So this is just, you know, last weekend.
Right.
So it's kind of par for the course, what you'd expect for a true freshman and a younger guy. But
so the other thing about that second game that I remember is that I watched this one on TV.
Yeah.
Football Saturdays are always more difficult to always make it out. But I remember that Clarkson got up early. And Michigan, the thing I think that was just so disheartening to me, and Anthony and I talked about this a little bit, we watched some of this game together, is that basically Clarkson got an early goal and said, come get us. Yeah. And they sat back. And Michigan couldn't do a whole lot. And that, to me, was sort of a precursor to what we've seen the next few weeks, is that they're still can't generate a ton 5-on-5.
Right. And
they get shots. Like, you're talking about Corsi, but how good are these shots? Nobody's getting into the slot and the crease and just, like, making goalies making phenomenal saves. They're just kind of peppering goalies and getting them kind of into rhythm, so to speak.
I agree. I think we've seen a lot of chip and chase hockey, and a lot of it's with guys who are okay skaters but not the greatest. So you're asking them to play a brand of hockey that gets the puck down into the opponent's zone, but they're not sustaining play in the zone. And when we get to the lineup section of the podcast, I know we'll talk about some guys who can drive play, but they just don't have that many of them. And you mentioned a minute ago losing Quinn Hughes, right? So your zone exit master is gone. So now you're trying to find a new way to break out of your own zone, and they've had some difficulty with that. And it's been mixed up sort of even within games. Like, I know we'll touch on it in a minute, but the Ohio State series last weekend, I believe it was the first period of Friday night's game, Michigan was in their own end almost the whole time. They were just pinned down there and could not exit to save their lives. And then you'll see sometimes it changes just depending on, in some cases, how sloppy the passes are.
Yeah.
They really have a, I think, very thin margin for error right now.
Yes. No, I agree. And so they get a tie out of that first series.
Yeah.
And you're kind of walking away thinking, you know, we probably should have had that first game.
Yeah.
And I think if they get a split in that series, it's you don't like splitting at home, but given kind of what Michigan has and who they were playing and the style that just kind of really sets up to really stop Michigan really well, I think I would have taken a split, and it's a little disappointing they couldn't get that one on Friday. The second week, they face Lake State, and this is kind of one of those series where you have to look at quality opponent and say, okay, they got a sweep, which they needed to do, and they got it.
Right.
But when you're watching the game, Lake State did not have many players that looked like they could skate with Michigan.
They didn't, and we're talking about two different animals here. Clarkson, I know it's early, but they're 13th in pairwise right now.
Yeah.
A split in that series looks pretty good right now.
And we're getting to the point of where you don't want to quote pairwise too early,
right,
but you're starting to get into that range in the next month or so of where, okay, now the numbers are starting to bear themselves out.
Mm-hmm. And they have a long enough track record that we can look at what they've done and who they have and figure that seems about right.
Exactly.
You know, that's a good team. But yeah, Lake State, as you were saying, it's a different talent level. So Michigan comes out the first night, wins 4-0, and as I was mentioning to you kind of before the podcast, in some ways that seemed extra advantageous.
Well, the thing I remember about that is, and you know, Mel even was quoted after the game talking about how bad their defense was. And it's kind of like, okay, you won a game 4-0. But I don't know if you remember the specifics of it, but they gave up 3 breakaways and 2 2-on-1s to a team that generated almost nothing on the offensive end aside from that. And they got out to a lead, but I mean, you know, as we were setting up, we were kind of talking about this, and I was like, you know, that game could have been like 6-3, and it wouldn't have been weird. It would have been like, no, this is probably what should have happened. And that's been really the outlier game for Michigan on the defensive end. We haven't talked a ton about their defense, but they've haven't allowed a ton of odd man rushes. That was the game that they did. And that was a little scary because you're like, well, they won a game and that's good, but this did not feel like a blowout win, even though you had a lot more talent than maybe your opponent.
Mm-hmm. But I'm glad you brought up the defense, because one thing I was going to mention, I used to do this post called Goal by Goal Analysis, and I started it in 2012,
which was amazing. Like, that was one of, I was a revolutionary post, if you, because you didn't have to see a game, you could walk in and read this post and all of a sudden know, okay, these are how these goals are scored. And you can look and find, why is Michigan giving up goals? Which is kind of why we both started getting into this in the first place.
Exactly. And since this is a very visual podcast, I'm sure that the listeners can see that I am blushing right now. Thank you. But as part of that, you know, this is the late red era through the CCM line and some great offensive teams. But there was a lot left wanting defensively.
There was.
And this
Wierenski
year.
And then.
Right.
I don't know.
It was the Wild West.
Yeah.
But what I'm seeing this year is a team that is very sound positionally. And so I completely agree with you that that one Lake State game is the outlier. And I think they've played enough games since then that we can kind of say that this team is going to hang in with most teams. I mean, I guess we haven't seen the upper echelon of the Big Ten just yet.
Yeah.
But I personally believe that they can hang against most teams just because they're much, much better positionally. These guys are picking up trailers. They're finding the right spot in front of the net. And it's just simple things, like little things like that, that give me some reason for hope going forward that they can at least hang with, you know, keep it within a goal with a lot of good teams as long as they can score. But they're not going to give up the odd man rushes like they used to. And I don't think they're going to just miss a guy, forget to mark somebody, especially a sharpshooter. And that's going to play to their benefit the rest of the year as far as Corsi is concerned.
Yeah, I haven't seen many really open shooters. Power play is obviously a different animal.
Sure.
When you don't have the same number of players on the ice. But no, Michigan used to lose guys in the slot and below the dots and just even in the house in general with relative consistency. And finally, it seems like, okay, if I don't know how much overall talent is there, but the organization has jumped up a lot. And so Michigan ends up getting through that Lake State series. They're kind of 2-1-1. You wish they'd be 3-1. But then they play Western Friday night. And this was probably one of the weirder games that I remember because Michigan is out to a 2-0 lead pretty early in the first. And then they end up getting like wrecked in Corsi. Like I think it was like a 20 attempt differential, but again, it never really felt in doubt because Michigan had got that lead. They got a goal in the second period to extend it to 3, and then they ended up shutting them out and winning 4-0 again, which was kind of a point of where you're like, okay, they've had 5 straight home games to open the year. They dropped that first game that you thought they probably could have won, but then they've won their last 3, and you're like, this is the springboard that they need as the Big Ten season is going to start. One more game at Western, who did not look great. They were missing their 2 best players, I think one of their forwards, and then Matias Samuelson was out. I don't think that either of those guys played in the second game. Second game, obviously, was during the Notre Dame football game.
Mm-hmm.
We were slightly preoccupied, and it was also not on TV,
right.
So we couldn't even see him if you wanted to, which, hooray, college hockey. But where's Anthony? I feel like if anything's going to find him, he's going to come out of some closet or something or some door and just be like, yes, I will. Let me talk about college hockey not being on TV. But
or we put out hot sauce.
That's that's true. That's a good idea, too. So they're kind of at that tipping point, and then they lose 4-1, but in a very different fashion because, and we'll talk about this a little bit in the second part when we kind of get into the specifics of looking at how you break down the different areas of measuring things in hockey, but they gave up 2 power play goals on the road at Western when they hadn't given up many power play goals all year. They hadn't given up as many goals all year, but and then they end up losing 4-1 in a game that we didn't really see, but they lost it because they got beat on special teams for really the first time this year, and they had a strong penalty kill coming in.
Yeah, to your point, it's 2-1 in the second period before they give up a second period power play goal and then a third period power play goal. That's that Saturday game that we didn't get to see is odd on the stat sheet. Just because, like you said, they out-attempt them by about 20 the night before. Maybe worth noting that Michigan blocked 20 of Western's 74 attempts. So,
right.
So defensively, you know, Michigan's getting there. And then Western also pulled 17 of them wide. But then the next night, it's almost even. It's Western out attempts them by 3, 54-51. And on the power play, Western has 12 attempts, Michigan has 8.
So there's
not a huge disparity
here.
No,
there's not.
And Western has one more power play than Michigan did that night. So it's kind of an odd game as far as we can tell.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and again, we're going to get to this in the next part when we talk about looking at the power play. But that's just, it was kind of like not what I expected from coming home. You know, if they lose on the road, you're kind of like, it's disappointing. But then, like, they've had a good penalty kill the first five games of the season. They give up goals on the power play. And then that kind of brings us to this last series against Ohio State, where the first period of the first game on Friday night, they kind of get out attempted, but somehow get out with a one-goal lead, which just seems super fluky. They get a second goal on, I believe it was a centering pass from, I think it was Luke Morgan flying down the right side and centering it to, I believe it was Orval for his first career goal. And it was just kind of a throw in front of the net from basically a 90-degree angle that he tips in, and they're up 2-0 in Columbus. And, I mean, if you remember anything about Ohio State in the past couple of years, is they've been very good defensively. They usually get pretty good goaltending. They're very, like, structurally sound. I've said before that I thought that they are sort of the ceiling for Michigan in terms of what this team can be like until you get a lot of higher-end talent, because they were very structurally sound defensively, would get solid goaltending, they win on special teams. They had a couple guys that could score some goals 5-on-5, but that was never how they were going to overwhelm you and win games. And so now you're in a position, 2-0, halfway through the game on the road, and then they give up two power play goals again, the momentum starts turning, they give up a 5-on-5, and all of a sudden now you're in a hole late of a game that you are winning on the scoreboard for the majority of the game, and it just kind of seems to what happens to Michigan and Columbus.
I agree with you. I don't think the teams are carbon copies of each other, but they're like cousins. Like, you can tell they could be related.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. Like, this Michigan team has Straussman and Nett, who I think
can be
a real difference maker. I mean, the way that he moves, I haven't seen from a Michigan goalie, just as far as lateral movement's concerned, in a while. And I felt like it was very unfortunate that sort of the one rebound that he gave up, the one bad rebound he gets scored on Saturday night against Ohio State.
Which he is not, I mean, that's something else. I don't mean to cut you off, but that's fine. Something that we have not seen a whole lot of this year.
Right.
Is he, I feel like when I've been watching him, and I've written this in a couple of the different hockey breakdowns, is that he generally directs pucks to the corner.
Yes.
He's tracked things really well. He's been in sort of control of the puck. Because it's one thing to play, to make a save and the puck could go anywhere. It's another thing to make a save and put it where you want it. And those are sort of the difference makers between a lot of these rebound goals. The other thing when you're saying talking about Michigan's defense is that when they leave the puck in the zone or in front of him, when there is a save that comes out, sometimes there are saves you can't control. You just have to make sure it doesn't go in the net. Michigan's defense has done a really good job of sweeping those away and keeping those clear. He has not had to make a lot of double and triple saves like we've been accustomed to in the past.
Exactly. And in my notes in preparation for this podcast, I had exactly that. He directs pucks to the corners. I thought the one area that he might need to work on over time is handling the puck.
Okay.
And what a nice minor thing to have to think about, you know, because all of a sudden you've got a goalie that, like I was saying, can go side to side.
Yeah.
And that puts the puck where you want it. That's a pretty strong thing to have going forward here.
Well, I mean, I was talking with Anthony, I think, just in person, and I was like, who's the last Michigan goalie that you would take over Straussman right now? Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's only 8 games. It's a small sample size, but he's kind of playing out of his mind. He's got to be hitting higher heights than probably what we expected, more towards what we hoped, I would guess. But who's the last guy that you would sit there who has and take over him who has put in a decent body of work at Michigan? I mean, Hunwick?
Yeah, that'd be my thought as well.
And then you're thinking, okay, am I going to take a 5'6 goalie who has to come way out of the net to make a save and cut down angles?
Right.
Or am I going to take a bigger guy who has moves just as well and is also in control? I mean, you probably at this point are you almost even taking Mann, assuming that his play continues. And then you're going back to like Billy Sauer, Al Montoya. I mean, we're looking back at like, gosh, when I was in school is the last time that we're seeing sort of goaltending like this.
Says something, right, that he seems to have definitively taken the job away from Hayden Levine, a senior who's been in a Frozen Four and who is, for all intents and purposes, a solid contributor that you know you can put in net and you know that you're going to get, you know, fairly good play out of. But this just seems like you said, like he's ahead of schedule as far as
there's no debate
progression
as to who the
might be to
is.
The ceiling. Yeah, exactly. And
that's
coming to the season, there was.
Yeah, I think there was a hope. Like, when I was thinking about starting, I was thinking about, all right, this needs to be Mann.
Yeah.
He needs to, if he doesn't win this job, we know what Hayden Levine is. He's not terrible, but he's not great. And he's a good, probably a solid backup. He got hot that second half of the year when they made their Frozen Four run and was really good, got them all the way there. But that's kind of what his ceiling was. Mann, I thought, watching him play last year, had another level to go to, and now we're starting to see him take it. And while we've kind of gotten derailed a little bit from talking about the Ohio State series, that has been sort of the underlying theme throughout the first eight games this year, is that Mann has been their best player. And I don't think it's really close.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
And then you have this game of where he gives one bad rebound and gets scored on, and they lose 3-2 in kind of a deflating game, because you're not necessarily winning the game in terms of controlling play the whole game, mm-hmm. but you found a way to get a lead, multiple goal lead in Columbus, something that Michigan has not always played well there recently. And then it just kind of comes crashing down. And then the next night, not really the same thing. I thought actually they started the game really well.
They did.
They dominated Corsi mm-hmm. in the first period. They controlled the puck in the zone, never really got those grade A scoring opportunities, and then they take a bad penalty. It's a 5-on-4, and Raby is forechecking on the kill, and he takes a guy down 90 feet from the goal, and you're like, okay, these are the penalties you cannot take in these situations. And Ohio State finds a way to score going on a 5-on-3, going up 1-0. Cam York answers back with like 3 minutes to go with his first collegiate goal, probably one of the plays that shows you what his ceiling is, where he takes the puck into the zone, almost Quinn Hughes, like, wraps around the net, beats Napier from the right post to the left, and tucks it inside, tying the game. And you're thinking, you know, Michigan just couldn't get a goal all weekend. They couldn't manufacture a goal, right?
Yeah, right,
like,
right.
They threw one in the net and it got tipped in. They kind of had a scrum on the power play the first night, and those were their only two goals. And we're sitting here late in the third, those being the only two goals on the weekend. And Cam York kind of puts the team on his shoulders, gets a goal, ties it up. And it looks like in a game that Michigan has controlled chances, they could steal this. And you're thinking, one out of two on the road is great. And then you just kind of, Jack Summers takes a shot from the blue line with a couple minutes to go, and he hits the first guy. And kind of the rule in hockey is similar in soccer, where if you have a free kick, you can't hit the guy in front of you. You've got to beat the first guy. If it hits somebody else later in the box and is cleared out, what are you going to do? But you cannot hit the first guy. And that's the rule on the point in hockey, right? Is like, you shoot, you got to beat the first guy. It hits him, deflects out. We have a 2-on-1 the other way. Something, right. Again, Michigan hasn't really done a whole lot this year.
Yeah.
And Mann makes the first save and gets beaten on the second one. Right. And they lose 2-1. And you're just like, it's just one of those, yeah, like, deflating moments, because they're right there.
They are.
But.
But. Right. So Saturday night, as you're saying, Michigan has one goal, and it's essentially one guy who's extremely talented, who, yeah, makes something out of nothing,
yeah,
and catches all the Ohio State skaters flat-footed, along with Napier. So they've just had such a hard time creating sustained chances in the offensive zone,
yeah,
that it seems like they needed that to jumpstart the offense, and then it sort of is still flat. And now I'm just wondering, where do you go from here?
Well,
you know, you have that on the back end, which is great to have a playmaker back there. Not that he has to be Quinn Hughes, but, you know, just a guy that has some offensive skill. And as I think we've seen York shake off some of the rust, it's starting to come out more and more. So that's great to have, you know, going to the rest of the conference and slate. But
maybe
then
he's getting healthier.
The other goals have just been basically whatever you can get when you can actually get traffic to the front of the net.
Yeah.
So this chip and chase thing, it's kind of tough, because you've got to get somebody down there to regain possession and then to cycle it off the boards and get traffic in front. And I don't know. I'm just wondering what you see offensively and where we go from here.
Well, I think that's a really good point. And we've talked about all four series, all eight games. Michigan is 3-4-1. So why don't we take a break, and we will break down some of the eight factors, as you and I like to call them, and look at maybe what their lines could be and maybe a couple ways to improve as we look forward towards Minnesota.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248 424-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Start this segment with looking at sort of the team overall and kind of breaking down some of their lines and pairings and sort of after what we've seen, what maybe they some options that they could go to that might make sense. Obviously, we're not at practice. We don't have all the insider info, but based on what we've seen so far, kind of what kind of ice time do you want to see guys get? Who do you want to see them play with? What would be interesting to you? And I think that when you look at Michigan's top line or what you think their top line should be, we were pretty much in unison saying that they need to put Beecher with Lockwood and Slaker.
I think we saw against Ohio State Beecher take on a larger role. It looks like they're trusting him to take defensive zone faceoffs plus offensive zone faceoffs. He's playing on special teams, and you know he's got that NHL body and the NHL skating, I think, to make that work as a top line center. He's only going to grow from here, so I think being that he can drive play, you want to put him in the middle and then just put good wingers with him. So, Beecher with Lockwood and Slaker seems like an ideal fit to me.
Well, Lockwood and Slaker have been playing together for 4 years now, mm-hmm. and they've played mostly on the same line and have done decently well. I don't think Slaker is the highest-end college hockey player we've seen. Lockwood has unfortunately been hurt a couple of different times. Would have been really nice to see him in Minneapolis, or St. Paul, I guess, a couple of years ago. But putting them with a puck driving center and allowing them to sit in sides and shoot or be able to take guys one-on-one and having a guy like Beecher who is probably has the highest ceiling of anybody, at least in the forward category.
Yeah.
The number one thing that we've seen so far from an offensive end is this team can't score.
Right.
Like they can't score on the power play. They can't score on 5-on-5. And one of the ways to do that is to put your best players together and try to generate some offense whenever you can get them on the ice. Maybe you double shift them from time to time. Maybe you only roll 3.5 lines. I don't know. But you can't, when you don't have a lot of high-end talent to spread around, you can't spread it out because then you're kind of like getting the same line three times. And
exactly.
When that's not working, and it for the most part has not so far, you have to give yourself a chance to score goals. And the best way to do that is to get your probably guys with the best chemistry with the guy with the highest ceiling and put them together.
I know I mentioned earlier the chip and chase hockey and how it's difficult to sort of get traffic in front and still make that work. And it can work, but like you were saying, you can't distribute guys across lines
right.
and expect it to work. It's fine if you're doing that with a couple of lines, but you have to put those high-end guys together. And that's what you have with the Lockwood Beecher Slaker line is that you've got a couple of shooters and then you've got a guy who can drive the net. You know, a power forward type,
right.
really. So if you want to let your shooter shoot, you've also got to make it tough on goalies. They can't see shots. And that's one thing that's kind of been lacking is that, for the most part, when Michigan does have attempts, it's stuff that's not that difficult for the goaltender to deal with.
Right. And you can live with, like, you know, our kind of fourth line that we won't really talk too much, third or fourth line mm-hmm. is the Van Wymoyle-Raby line because they've been together for 2 years, or this is their second year. They've been pretty good. It's not like a high-end tons of talent line, but they work really hard. They seem to have a lot of chemistry together. I mean, Moyle and Van Wy scored on a 2-on-1 together. You just kind of, with a pass from Raby actually to set that up, which might have been the best play of the three of that, you just have some consistency there that there's no reason to really mess with that because you're getting the most as you can out of those three guys. So you can have some of those lines that kind of work hard lines, but you do need a high-end line, and this is Michigan's best shot, Lockwood, Beecher and Slaker, and I get why maybe you don't start Beecher there in his first few games,
sure.
first couple series,
mm-hmm.
but now we're in a position of where, hey, we know what direction this is going, someone's got to put the puck in the back of the net, and he's looked as dangerous as anybody.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have been surprised if it took him a little bit longer to work his way into that role as the top line center, but I think he's a little bit ahead of schedule in that, because I think based off what I saw this weekend against a pretty good team in Ohio State, yeah, he's ready for that. And it's nice timing considering it's now, you know, in conference play.
And you lost your two first Big Ten games. You can't get in a big hole.
Right.
You have to start. I mean, Michigan's had a couple of not great falls and have rebounded with better winters, but maybe let's not get into that again. Like, give Beecher a shot. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but you have to try something, because right now you have five guys on the team that are tied for the team leading points, and that's at four. And that's just too low.
And one's a defenseman.
Yeah.
A high-end defenseman.
Who's only played in five games. Right. So, anyway. So then that probably would hopefully be their top line. Second line, we kind of jimmied these guys around a little bit, but I kind of like Jacob Hayhurst. I see him a couple of times stick handling. Reminds me a little bit of Alex Kyle, if you remember him. He could kind of move the puck in small spaces. He's beaten a couple guys, creating opportunities. Hasn't scored yet, but has at least given other players chances.
Yeah.
And one of those guys that it seems like it makes sense to play with him is Jack Becker, a guy who's in that Beecher role, who you mentioned in prep. You're glad that they kind of broke Beecher and Becker up, because they're kind of the same player. So if you give Hayhurst, a creator, a guy who can finish in front of the net and put in rebounds, and then you give him a guy on the other wing who we kind of, again, went back and forth. There's no real right answer here, but I'd kind of like to see it be Eric Ciccolini, because, again, he's tied for the lead with 4 points, but he's 18, he's drafted. This is a guy that has a ceiling that's a little bit higher probably than others, and you want to give this guy a chance to see where he can go. Put him with a guy who can jam the net and a guy who can create, and that seems like a good chance for him to succeed.
So I really like Hayhurst's game. I think he's a good skater. I think he's a good distributor. And I don't think you necessarily need him to be the guy that puts the puck in the net if he's putting other guys in the right position to put the puck in the net.
Right.
And he's a smart player. He's played over 100 games at the college level.
That's true.
And you can see that right away. He stepped into the lineup, and even though he's a grad transfer, it looks like he's been there for quite a while. And so I like him in the middle, and I like Becker being the guy that can go, you know, win a board battle, which, to his credit, he is quite good at.
Yes.
Get the puck to somebody else, then head to the front and muck things up for the goaltender. And like you said, Ciccolini, he's just a high-ceiling guy, so if you're going to put somebody on the second line with a guy who can drive play and a guy who can screen the goaltender, it might as well be somebody that you think has a chance to develop.
And the other thing is, again, it's only 8 games, but look at their stats. No one is blowing you away offensively here, but he has 4 points, which is tied for the team lead. Somehow that's the case. So you can't even sit there and say, well, he's not producing. Well, he is, because he's doing as well as anyone else is, so might as well give him a chance with, like you said, a guy who can finish, a guy who can create. Let him be a part of that.
Absolutely. And as we also were talking about in prep, he's sort of a bigger-bodied guy.
Mm-hmm.
They have quite a few undersized forwards.
And that has been the case, yes.
You're going to get the puck to a guy who's a shooter who's also a little bit of a bigger body, and that's fine because he can kind of rotate out with Becker, who's obviously huge at 6'4 and over 200.
Yeah. So then the third line, this was where, you know, there's Nick Pasta is tied for the team-leading goals at 3. All those are power play goals. So it's not like I've seen him drive a ton on even strength, but he's still a senior. He's been around. He's skated a lot of games for Michigan. If you put him out there as a third line center, and then Lambert is a guy that we kind of like, sort of. He came along last year and thought, okay, maybe this is something that he can build on. Hasn't had the greatest start to the year, but put him with a senior center, and then a guy who seems like he might have a high floor in Orval. And now, you know, can that be a third line? Maybe.
Yeah, you know, as far as Lambert's concerned, he's a guy who's flashed here and there, and I kind of thought Lambert was a little bit of an also-ran until this past weekend, and it's probably no coincidence. It was when he was on the top line with some skilled guys, but I saw some potential there. He's a better skater than I thought he was. I think he's got a shot, so I'd like to see him get a chance. And the thing about Nick Pastiov is that it seemed they just trust him in the faceoff circle.
That's true.
And so he's a guy that can take draws for you in either zone. And you need somebody like that in the lineup.
They do actually have 3 dependable centers, and 4 if you count Van Wy.
Yeah.
I mean, Michigan hasn't always been stacked with centers, and I actually think that their center play and depth is acceptable for this level of college hockey. It's probably not elite, but it is. I've definitely seen a lot worse that they've put out in the last few years.
Yeah, just a few years ago, I think they were rotating wings and just trying to find anybody who could play center. So it's nice to see that development.
No, you're right. And then we mentioned the fourth line, which might be the third line. Sometimes it might be the second line.
Yeah. I think they got a nominal start as the top line. I love this line. I have no problem with that, by the way.
No, I think it doesn't have a high ceiling, but you know what you're going to get, and you know that if you watch the penalty kill, these guys play on the penalty kill. They're not power play guys.
No.
But they are also offensive zone guys because they can work the boards really well. They throw the puck to the center. You can see there's a lot of chemistry between them just in their passing. They know where they're going to be. We've seen them move the puck out in and out of the zones really well. And they're all kind of young in that regard too. So and they actually all have a lot of speed. Van Wyn and Raby can kind of move. Moyle tends to be the guy that finishes in the middle, in the slot a little bit. So that's not a terrible line to have as your third or fourth line. The other guys then that they've rotated through, Mike Pasta, who honestly I thought would be a little bit better by this time, especially with the way that Nick has played, and when they played him with Nick and Becker at times, he's looked good. Hasn't really started that well. He's gotten scratched, I believe, once or twice already this year. And then Morgan, again, kind of a guy who has filled into spots, but it's never really a guy that stands out on the ice that you're drawn to. And then they played Nick Granowitz in the last game against Ohio State, and he looked fast.
He did.
I don't know what else is really there. I don't know that he's going to be a guy that's going to jump in and contribute on a higher line, but he at least looked fast. It's an option that you could probably bring in from time to time. But I think that those first four lines we mentioned are, in our opinion, kind of where we think Michigan should go. Obviously, you can move a guy around here or there, but I just wouldn't touch the Van Wyn line, and I definitely would leave your three best guys, Beecher, Lockwood, and Slaker up top.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for speed and tenacity, and that's what you get with the Van Wyn, Moyle, and Raby line.
The defense kind of works itself out. I mean, you're not, as long as Martin and York are healthy, they're your top pairing. You're going to match them up against the best of the opponents. Summers has been okay, better. Blankenberg, I think, has been pretty good. At times, he's smaller.
Yeah.
But he has looked good going forward a little bit, and I don't really have any qualms with Blankenberg in the defensive end, despite his size. The third pairing probably is going to be Luce and Person. Person, you mentioned you thought maybe he didn't start the year as well, but has settled in.
Yeah, I think it was the Lake State series that it seemed like he was still trying to figure out exactly what his assignment was at certain times, and it seemed like he blew a few of them. Not that it resulted in goals, but just that he was kind of figuring it out on the fly. Yep. And I feel like he's sort of reversed that in these next few games here, next six games. I think he's a good fit with Luce, just in terms of guys who can skate versus guys who are more defensive stalwarts, if you will.
Larger bodied.
Yes, exactly. Clear the crease, guys. And then that second pairing, Summers and Blankenberg. I mean, I agree with what you were saying. Blankenberg, I actually really like his game. I think he's a good skater. I think he's a pretty good puck mover, and he's more physical than I thought he was.
Especially for being
than I thought he would be. Right, exactly. And then Summers, I think, is still kind of developing. It seems like they want him to be a guy who can play the point and a guy who can move the puck and start to get the rush going. And so I think it'll be interesting to watch what happens with him the rest of the year.
Yep. And then I'm just going to bring up Shane Switzer because again, this was only one or two times that I've really seen him. I don't think he's only played that one game, and he actually got an assist on it, but I thought he looked good going forward. I've talked to some people and they've mentioned, you know, that, you know, maybe he's not as well trusted on the defensive end, and okay, that's fine. And so if you're not going to play him because of that, like, I get that, and especially with what this team is, if they hang in a game because they get elite goaltending, which they're getting, and we talked about that, and good defense, you can't give up a silly goal because you're either miss an assignment or you're out of position or you get caught up ice or something like that. So I think that there was something to him going forward a little bit, but it does not seem like he has won the coach's trust on the defensive end just quite yet.
Yeah, we've seen more of Gingell than Switzer, so
that's actually true.
That says something, I think, about who they trust right now.
Yeah.
But he's a guy that I could see sort of taking over that role. If a guy's injured, he could be pressed into service further down the road.
Yep.
So I guess it's just nice to have another backup option there.
So that's kind of the lineup. And the only reason we're going through this now, usually we would do this in the beginning of the year, but it just feels like Michigan needs to make some changes. And one of those is, I think this all started with, you have to get that top line together, because if you just look at their offensive total so far, it's tough to watch. Like, not only are they not scoring goals, but we talked about they're not getting the grade A chances. It's not like they don't get shots from the house, but sometimes they're off balance. Sometimes the guy's in their face. Sometimes there's, you know, they're not like making a move or putting passes together to get dunks and layups, to put it in basketball terms. And that needs to happen at some time during the game. And the best way to do that is to jack that top line. And I think that hopefully is what we'll see going forward. We'll find out this weekend. Speaking of this weekend.
Yes.
You did a little bit of extensive previewing of Minnesota. When I generally preview, I tweet preview games, and I try to give you a kind of a quick rundown of what to expect or different views to take of a team. And we talked about it a little bit last year. Anthony and I broke some of these down. But the first thing that we would look at in this particular case is pairwise. Because right. That tells you where you are, computer standing. And Michigan is where?
22nd.
Which is honestly a little better than I thought they would be.
I was thinking that too.
Maybe it's just the three straight losses, but
yeah.
So they're kind of on par with sort of where we thought they would be coming into the year a little bit, as was thinking top half,
yeah.
Hopefully top third. If they get hot, some things go their way, maybe they make a run at the tournament. And 22nd is not the worst place to be.
Can I just go backwards for
one second? Oh, I'm sorry, sure.
It's related to what you were just saying.
Okay.
Right, so top third, that's kind of where I was expecting them to be as well. And we've seen great goaltending. We've seen
maybe elite goaltending.
Yeah, shore up a lot defensively. And so now you just need that one piece to fall into place.
You also have to score goals.
No, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. But it's just so odd, because for so many years it was like that was the thing I didn't think about. And it was like, could someone just defend anybody? Now you're getting all this stuff that I was hoping for in the, I guess it'd be the mid-2010s, but you don't have the offense anymore.
Well, that's
so been, I feel like they're close. They're very close.
That's been Michigan hockey since we've known it. Is scoring goals, flying up and down
the
ice.
Exactly. We're born into that.
Awesome on the power play. Oh. Good high-end talent that you know is going to be playing professionally and scoring goals. And if they get any sort of goaltending or they defend at all, it's a year you're thinking we might be going to Frozen Four. And now it's like the inverse.
Yeah.
And you're like trying to just buy goals if possible from anywhere. So 22nd in pairwise. Minnesota's 40th.
This is a weird Minnesota team.
Minnesota kind of fell off a cliff.
Yes.
With Lucia.
Yep.
They fire him, get Motzko from St. Cloud, who had built that program, probably a good hire. Still early in his tenure. It was only his second year. But 40th seems still low for what you would expect Minnesota to be.
Exactly. I mean, you look at the Big Ten as it is right now with Notre Dame, Penn State, and I guess Wisconsin at the top.
And
Ohio State, right. And when has Minnesota ever been at the bottom of that? But they're pretty clearly there right now. And the schedule bears that out.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, early season pairwise is not the most reliable thing in the world, but it's not like Minnesota's looked fantastic.
No, you're right about that. So then the next stat we look at is Corsi, which is just kind of how much you possess the puck, how many shots that you get on net in even strength. Attempts on net, I should say. And Michigan is a little lower than we're used to them being. They're kind of down like about halfway, at about 29th, I think, they're only possessing the puck about 50% of the time. We're used to them being a few percentage points higher and probably being in the top 15, top 12-ish. And that should just kind of tell you sort of what they're able to generate with some of these players.
And Minnesota is even lower. So here
also,
you have a bunch of drafted skaters who, it's probably time to point out now, are third and lower round picks.
Right.
So they're trying to make something with guys that the NHL thinks maybe could turn into something but aren't sure things. So they don't have that typical high-end talent.
They have a couple of high-end defensemen.
Yes.
But
not
in the forward.
In the forward unit, right. And I think they're suffering for it, right? Their even strength Corsi is 48.9%.
Which is, I think, translated, we were looking about 35th, 36th in the country.
Yeah, out of 60 teams.
Which just seems very low for a team that has, as we're going to, I'll spoiler here, 14 drafted skaters. Now, two of them are goalies, and you only play one.
Right.
But that's a lot of drafted guys.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are low-end, like we were talking about. They're fourth through seventh rounders. But, I mean...
Exactly.
You would expect a little bit more.
It's a very visual podcast, but David's face says it all.
Oh, jeez. So, then the next thing in this we might spend a little bit of time on is the power play. And both teams are very similar in this regard. But Michigan's power play percentage is at, like, 17.6%. And so here's the thing. Like, I remember growing up watching teams that could play defense in the NHL, and they didn't have the best goal scorers, but they could win on special teams. And so when you can play good defense, get good goaltending, and then you get an opportunity to score a goal with one extra player on the ice, you have to take that, and you have to limit your opponents. And that is the way that Michigan is needed to win. I thought that if they could build a good power play, even if they can't score a ton of 5-on-5 goals, but they could play well defensively and get a nice power play, 20 to 25% in that range, they could have chances to win games, because if you can draw a few penalties, you can convert, build it on your good goaltending, elite goaltending, and good defense. You can do that, but that is not borne out.
Yeah, I think there's some hope yet.
Okay.
I know they had I know they had a streak of like 6 or 7 games where they scored a power play goal in every game, but
okay.
But this is like 1-5, 1-5, 1-5. Then Saturday night, Michigan goes 0-2. First time they haven't scored in quite a while.
And they didn't
but
get many chances.
They just didn't get many chances, right? Bailey Johnson had an article in the Daily this week about how they are trying to differentiate the first and second unit power play to make it more difficult for opponents to play against them. So they're still going to play a 1-3-1. Because most people play a 1-3-1.
Probably with their number one unit.
The first unit is going to be one defenseman, 4 forwards. Yeah. The second unit is going to be 2 defensemen, 3 forwards.
Okay.
And so that's a little bit more of a grinded outlook, I think. But just to make it harder to scout, as other teams are doing to them.
Okay.
And so she was noting that, you know, Bill McCault's pulling this stuff out of the NHL, where that's one of the trends right now. Hmm. And I just feel like that top unit, the one defenseman, 4 forward look, has potential to turn into something, but they got to pass the puck more crisply. I mean,
well,
there were lanes available this weekend, and I personally felt like they were just kind of slow moving the puck around.
They also have trouble just holding the zone, like getting it into the zone and setting it up. Like, that's been the thing that to me has just been baffling is,
yeah,
like, you have an extra player on the ice, right? Like, you should be able to get the puck in the zone at least, especially when if you stack your top line and you put Beecher with Lockwood, Slaker, maybe Nick Pasta, or Hayhurst, and then you have York in the back. Like, that sounds like something that could be viable at
exactly.
least. And it hasn't really been. I mean, mm-hmm. they've put a few goals in the net, but I think that, like, this was part of the reason that I was frustrated a little bit about that first Clarkson game, is it's a 1-1 game, Michigan's dominating, even strength, and they go 0-for-7 on the power play, including a couple of 5-on-3s, and you're like, if you can put together a 5-on-3 power play, you win games
yeah.
against good teams. And that's just been, I think that has just kind of exacerbated the even strength struggles that they've had. Is like,
yeah, it definitely has.
Brian talks about a lot when we talk about hockey, sometimes on air, sometimes off air, but he talks a lot about they just don't always have the high-end talent. And I get that, but you still can create open shots if you have an extra player on the ice. I feel like if you can spread the ice well and pass well, which should be fundamentals of hockey. I mean, that's how John Beilein made his name in basketball, was it wasn't anything flashy. It was just very fundamentally sound ball movement. If you can do the same thing on the ice in that regard, like you can get opportunities. And that's the thing I feel like they're not even doing, is it's not even, they're not getting a lot of good chances.
So I think this is a good time to look at Cam York having been out of the lineup.
That's a good point.
So you've got that play generator from the point out of the lineup for almost half your game so far.
Yeah.
And so he hasn't had that many opportunities to quarterback that power play in the 1-3-1. And so I think going forward, once he gets a few more chances, I think that top unit could gel.
Yeah.
Right. So they've been kind of plugging and playing different guys, trying to figure out what would work, what doesn't in his absence. So now it comes down to health, which is always fun in sports. Who doesn't love that?
Yeah, for real. We'll then move on to the penalty kill. And this has been the other thing where, you know, we're kind of wondering, can Michigan improve here? Because this has been their bugaboo for the past couple of years. It looked like they were for the first part of the year, but maybe that was a reflection of playing some low-end power plays in Western and Lake State, because they go to Western on the road, give up a couple, give up three of their five goals on the weekend in Columbus on the power play, and, you know, I don't know, maybe it hasn't taken the strides that we were hoping for, because it's down around 79%, which is not awful. It's been, I've seen it worse, but it's not good.
Yeah, the numbers are bad, but, and this may be where the torch and pitchfork crowd comes out, I feel like it's passed the eye test more than in past years. I've been more impressed with their ability to switch at the top than I have been in the last, I think, 2 years, I would say.
Okay.
And so I feel like they're generally responding to their responsibilities better, and yet the numbers don't bear that out. You're absolutely right. It's just they don't. But so this is like an eye test versus a numbers test. And,
yeah.
And the eye test to me says this unit may stabilize over time.
Okay.
The numbers say,
well, they're going to need it.
Yeah, for sure.
Because if they're not going to, if you cannot generate a lot 5-on-5, you have to win special teams. And those are two areas that, you know, moving some lines around maybe a little bit is one thing they can do. The other thing is you've got to get better on special teams, because those are things that you can control more of. You're never going to shut someone out completely on the power, on the penalty kill, but you can do better. Minnesota has 14 drafted skaters. We mentioned that's a lot. But then the next thing is we look at guys that are scoring over 0.75 goal or points per game, and they have one, which is the same as Michigan, which is just kind of mind-boggling in that sense.
It is, isn't it?
I get why Michigan is in that spot, because I've seen them play. I guess when I look at 14 drafted skaters, man, it just seems like there should be more there. And maybe they've gotten unlucky, maybe they've played good teams, maybe not, after the look on your face in this very visual podcast.
I don't know, Niagara. We'll know more after we see them live.
Yeah,
but it's just like not even close. They too have a bunch of players bunched up at 4 points or 3 points in their case.
So maybe it's getting spread out.
So I guess
a little.
It's spread out a little, but the goal scoring's not really. They've got Sammy Walker with 7 points in 8 games, 4 goals, and then their next leading scorer is Scott Reedy with 3 goals and 3 points on the year.
So
it's a little bit of a Becker situation.
Becker. Yeah, I was about to say. So I don't really know what to make of that. I mean, that's kind of a thing where you'd expect a little bit more, but it hasn't really come together for them on the offensive end just yet. In net, we can compare. We've talked about Strassman. He's been the best that we've seen in the better part of a decade so far. 8 games. Got it. Sample size. I know, Ed Fang. Hopefully you're listening. But
hi, Ed.
I get that, but from when you watch him play, you don't. Doesn't seem like he's getting lucky.
No.
It seems like he's in the right position. He's tracking the puck well.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about being in control, moving rebounds to the side instead of out in front of you. You talked about maybe he can work a little bit on his stick handling, potentially. But that is, he's been the best player on the ice for Michigan, game in and game out. His save percentage is at 93. His even strength is even higher. And his GAA is at 2, which is the lowest I can remember a Michigan goalie's being in. Probably since I've worked at MGO Blog.
Yeah, same here. Yep. Since I wrote diaries. Since before I did diaries.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
We're going back. And then Minnesota's going to bring in JLF. We remember him from being here a couple of years ago.
Old friend, yep.
He's only played 3 games. His numbers look similar. About 90, under 90 save percentage. And his GAA is also kind of low, high, I guess, in that sense. And then they have a guy, Mo. Also
yeah.
drafted a little bit lower with about a little bit better numbers, 916 save percentage and a 2.37. Looks like he probably has won the job.
It looks like it, based on the last... Yeah, he but started both games against Duluth, and that says something.
Yeah.
And played the one before that as well. They gave JLF a chance against Niagara.
And...
Not so great.
Not so great.
Yeah.
So... Maybe we'll see him this weekend, although it looks more like it's trending towards Mo, I guess.
It seems like it. They're kind of similar in that they're both bigger-bodied guys, but Mo's a little bit younger. He's gotten 2 starts in a row, which they had been splitting series.
Yep.
So, unfortunate for JLF, from everything we've heard, he's a good guy, works hard, but just isn't working out.
It's been interesting. 2 teams that are kind of in similar positions.
Yeah.
two power programs that have been pillars of this sport forever, and they're both struggling right now. Mm-hmm. So it's in these games are in Yost. Michigan has typically done well against Minnesota the last couple of years in Yost. This is a big series for them. After not getting any points on the road, they need to get maybe they don't need six, but they need at least four or five. Like, these are the games you have to win against, because you get those higher-end teams, like the scoring of Wisconsin and Penn State and the stability of Notre Dame, tough to beat all the time. Minnesota's in a struggling spot. These are games they can get, should get, hopefully will get.
Exactly.
So,
because now, all of a sudden, Notre Dame is apparently an offensive juggernaut, and Penn State has one of the best goaltenders in the league.
Great.
So when you live in bizarro world,
yeah,
you have to try to make something work.
Well, Adam, thank you. I'm sorry, Peppermint. Can I call you Peppermint?
You have for quite a while.
I have called
you
for too long. I think that's what you are on my phone. But thank you for coming on. It's been good to get you on here. If Anthony comes back, we'll definitely have you on if you can make it again. You've done a good job. You've been covering. GBGA has been amazing. Not doing as much anymore, but it was one of the most creative things I've seen regarding hockey coverage. So
thanks, I appreciate that. But this is a fun new outlet.
Yes.
This is great.
Yes, we will definitely have you on again, Adam. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the MGO HockeyCast. I'm Adam Schnepp with David Nasternak. This has been the spoken word version of goal-by-goal analysis.